Herzlich willkommen zum facettenreichen Podcast Das Herz einer Frau. Kommunikation, Emotionen und Temperamente. Hallo und herzlich willkommen beim Podcast Das Herz einer Frau. Erstmal heiße ich euch alle da draußen wirklich ganz besonders willkommen. Und ich bin so froh, dass der Podcast wieder zurück ist. Wie ich auch bereits auf Facebook und auch, ich weiß gar nicht, wo ich es noch geschrieben habe, ist auch egal, war das für mich eine Phase, wo so viel passiert ist, dass ich die Konzentration nicht hatte und auch nicht die Energie, um den Podcast so fortzuführen, wie ich es mir gerne gewünscht hätte. Dafür freue ich mich umso mehr, dass der Podcast jetzt wieder gestartet ist und ich wieder die Möglichkeit habe und hatte schon bereits, ganz tolle Frauen zu interviewen. Ich habe gemerkt, aus irgendeinem Grund ist mein Fokus sehr stark auf den Berufsbildern der Frauen. Und ich glaube, dass es damit zusammenhängt, dass ich persönlich denke, dass es tatsächlich möglich ist, einen Beruf aus ganz unterschiedlichen Sparten zu machen, aber vor allem mich immer auch der Weg dorthin interessiert. Also das heißt, wie die Frau diesen Weg gefunden hat für sich. Und deshalb bin ich ganz besonders glücklich, euch heute Stella vorstellen zu dürfen. Sie ist die Gründerin von 22 Stars, der 22 Stars Foundation, auch 22 Stars Jury. Es ist ein Projekt, was in Uganda gegründet wurde. Und zwar unterstützt es zum einen Frauen, aber auch Kinder, dass sie wieder in die Schule gehen können. Und Stella erzählt heute, wie sie mit diesem Projekt begonnen hat. Wie sie überhaupt dazu gekommen ist. Und was seit 2013, seitdem 22 Stars Jury gegründet wurde, auch alles passiert ist. Und was mich persönlich auch ganz besonders berührt hat, ist tatsächlich, dass sie ganz fest der Meinung ist, wirklich auch Themen, die du hast, also das heißt Probleme mit deinem eigenen Business, die zu adressieren, um Lösungen mit anderen auch finden zu können. Denn, und das ist was, was ich persönlich immer wieder merke, das nach außen zu kommunizieren, dass das zum Beispiel mal nicht läuft oder man merkt so, okay, irgendwie hat man eine komische Strategie oder es ist, läuft nicht so, wie wir uns das gerade wünschen mit unseren Businesses. Dass aber genau das auch eine Möglichkeit sein kann, um Lösungen von außen zu bekommen, beziehungsweise Ideen, Vorschläge, was auch immer, was dich dann im nächsten Schritt wieder weiterbringen kann. Und dafür gibt es auch diesen Podcast, denn ich weiß, die Interviews sind lang, aber ich glaube, dass diese ganzen Frauen, die ich interviewe, so unglaublich viel zu sagen haben und vor allem auch manchmal im Detail die Magie steckt. Das heißt, da zu wissen, da hat sie das und das und das gemacht, um dann zu oder und dann hat sich das und das und das entwickelt. Und das ist auch total spannend, also wie der Weg von Stella sich entwickelt hat, jetzt zu dieser Foundation und wie es immer weiter wächst und was natürlich jetzt auch ihre neuesten Erkenntnisse sind. Und all das hört ihr jetzt in dieser Podcast-Folge und ich wünsche euch ganz, ganz, ganz viel Spaß. Wir wünschen euch ganz viel Spaß. Die Podcast-Folge ist auf Englisch. Ich hoffe, ihr genießt sie. Freue mich natürlich riesig, wenn ihr die Folge auch teilt, wenn ihr merkt, oh Gott, ja, mega, oder ihr wollt das Projekt unterstützen. Auch da habt ihr die Möglichkeit, in den Shownotes stehen dann entsprechend die ganzen Infos. Vielleicht magst du ein Kind selber dann in den Kindergarten schicken oder dann auch in weiterführende Schulen. Also gibt es ganz unterschiedliche Modelle. Da kannst du dann einfach mal auf der Website gucken. Ansonsten, ja, genießt diese Podcast-Folge und ihr könnt auch gerne nochmal bei www.dasherzeinerfrau.de vorbeischauen. Ich habe noch Plätze für den September, für die Reise, für die Femme Sauvage, für die wilde Frau in dir. Keine Angst davor, denn die wilde Frau in der birgt sich unglaublich viel Kreativität. Und vor allem geht es wirklich nochmal ganz stark auch um das Thema, was ich letztes Jahr aufgegriffen habe auf der Reise, nämlich die Kunst des Seins. Wirklich hier, im Hier und Jetzt zu sein, sich zu spüren und auch ins Genießen zu kommen. Weil das, was es da draußen gibt, wirklich wahrzunehmen und nicht ständig auch in diesen eigenen Kampf, in dieses, und ich will es aber irgendwie anders. Und jetzt ist es aber so, wie es ist. Und du kannst es verändern zu jeder Zeit, nur Ich persönlich glaube daran, dass es ganz, ganz wichtig ist, erstmal auch anzunehmen und diesen Moment wertzuschätzen, den du da vor dir hast. So, jetzt ganz, ganz viel Spaß.
Hallo und herzlich willkommen beim Podcast Das Herz einer Frau. Mein Name ist Kim Jasmin und ich darf heute mit Stella Airoldi, habe ich es richtig ausgesprochen, Stella? Airoldi. Wo bist du ursprünglich her?
Meine Mutter ist halb Italienerin, da kommt der Name her. Ich bin selber in Deutschland geboren, aber mit 6 Jahren nach Holland umgezogen.
Okay, gut, wow. Also Airoldi, das ist ein schöner Name auf jeden Fall. Und wir machen das Interview auf Englisch, also für euch. Wir werden jetzt gleich switchen. Auf jeden Fall freue ich mich, dass es geklappt hat. Wir sind beide in Europa, aber sitzen nicht uns gegenüber. Das heißt, wenn es an der Qualität so ein bisschen hapert, dann hoffe ich, dass ihr uns das verzeiht. Ja, erstmal herzlich willkommen. Welcome, Stella. So, we met in Dahab at the Digital Nomad Camp, and you were presenting your project. And I would love you to take us back to the point before we start actually talking about the project. What was driving you in that time, and why did you start it, your project 22 Stars, or the foundation?
Yeah. Yes, so thank you for the question. And yeah, thanks for having me here on your interview. And yes, indeed, I'm sitting right now in the Netherlands and you are in London, I think.
Yes, right.
But yes, so my background is international law and development aid. So during my studies, which is like 10 years ago, it's 2009. Uganda to do research about child victims and witnesses participating at the International Criminal Court in Den Haag, and also about child soldiers who participated in the Lord's Assistance Army in Uganda. So two really heavy topics. I did also research for almost 3 years because I did 2 masters. And when I was like in Uganda to do some research, I met a woman called Susan Laker, and I was introduced by her through David and Ida, who are 2 people who I was volunteering with at the AIDS Information Center. They introduced me to Susan because they found out about the research I was doing with the post-war victims, and they told me, like, you know, Stella, you don't have to go all up to Northern Uganda. You can also just stay here in Kampala and go to Asholi Quarter, which is an internally displaced camp for the refugees from Northern Uganda. So I went there and I met Susan, and they introduced me particularly to Susan because they knew that I loved jewelry. I was wearing every day like tons of necklaces and bracelets, all of that. So they thought immediately, like, hey, you should meet up with Susan. She will be interesting for your thesis. But yeah, you might also be able to help her out by buying some of her jewelries. Mm-hmm. So I met up with Susan and I was immediately like, yeah, amazed by her whole presence. She was 2 years older than me. So I was 23 years old and Susan was about 25. And we looked somehow similar, like we communicated like through David. So she didn't speak English back then, but she just had like a really funny sense of humor, and we talked about everything like fashion and men, and then of course also about the sad sides from the conflict which she survived, and also the fact that she had 3 children and her kids were around 8, 10 and 12 years old, even though Susan was only 25 herself. So she got them at a really, really young age. And that really like wrecked me, you know, like her whole story. She also survived cancer and tuberculosis. She was HIV positive. But even though, she had all the struggles in her life, she was still like, really positive, full of jokes, dancing, smiling, and she made like this incredible jewelry out of recycled paper. So that's actually how my first contact started in Uganda. Sorry, it's a bit like a long story already. Then I went back to the Netherlands. As I already mentioned, I was writing about this topic with the child soldiers and the post-war victims for my thesis for about 2 or 3 years. And in the meantime, I stayed in contact with Susan through David and Ida. I sent them emails and they sent me back emails. And then I just ordered once a year through them jewelry for my friends and family from Susan. So just to help her out. Yeah, because I was writing about not just her, of course, but about like the whole thing that happens in Uganda. And I just really felt like helpless a bit. I really had a feeling like no one is going to read my thesis. I'm not like helping out anyone with this. And yeah, what's actually going to be done on the ground for these women? Because I also started many development organizations who used to be active in Uganda. Once they had peace again in North Uganda in 2006, all disappeared. And many women, yeah, behind, they had like nothing, and they were really used to this whole culture of only receiving donations, receiving goods, receiving food, but no one really teach them small business skills, entrepreneurship, or you know, how to actually like survive by themselves without being dependent on aid organizations. So so that really like bothered me. So that's why I started to buy jewelry from Susan. And then I worked in China at a European Union delegation, 2012. And in 2012, like a video became viral, which was called Stop Kony Now. Not sure if anyone heard about it, probably back then, yes. But now, I mean, it's already like 7 years ago. And yeah, so this video went viral and a lot of people started to ask me, about Susan and how my time in Uganda was, or they asked me to forward my thesis to them because they knew that I actually wrote about, those topics. And then I also started wondering myself, like, yeah, how is Susan actually doing right now? And then I was like in between jobs. I wasn't sure if I wanted to stay in China or if I wanted to move to New York City. I had like no clue what my next step would be. But I was really a bit fed up with working at just an international organization in a gray office. I really wanted to be more working directly together with people on the ground in development countries. So I decided to go back to Uganda, having no clue what to expect.
Wow.
And yeah, I was super scared. So I asked like one of my best friends to actually join me to come there. Because I was like, the first time when I went there, you know, it's a volunteer, it's information center. So everything was like organized for me. I knew where I was going to stay. I had a pickup, everything. And the second time I was so insecure because I needed to organize everything myself, you know, and I just really didn't know like what to expect. So I went back for only 10 days, quite short. But again, like I really didn't know what I could expect over there. And it was not that I came back to volunteer or to, or to do a safari or something. You know, I just really went back only like, to meet up with Susan and see how things went over there. And of course, with David and Ida as well. So I went back and then to my big surprise, Susan really received all the money that I sent for the jewelry and she went back to school herself because she said like the moment she met me that after I left that she was certain that at one point I would come back. And of course, like, you know, that like many volunteers, they would never come back. They just spent a few months in Uganda and then they have their next project lined up in Kenya, then their next project in Cambodia, then their next project in Colombia, you know. So yeah, a lot of volunteers, they always go to new countries, you know, to volunteer at, or they will just get like a full-time job which would not allow them anymore, you know, to travel that much, and then they would rather go to a new country than coming back. Mm-hmm. So even though Susan knew like that the chances of me coming back would be quite small, she still really had like this hope and belief that she would know I would come back. And she was like, yeah, when Stella comes back, I really want to talk to her myself about later. So she spoke English when I came back. And
how was that for you?
Really crazy. But that whole week it was just like insane because like I already mentioned, like I really came there not really knowing what would go on. So I was like super anxious. Then I met Susan again, her kids. She also moved to a slightly bigger house. Before, she was really living like in something without real doors, like really nothing. And then a new place was slightly bigger, but still no running water, no electricity. But yeah, I was just like really amazed, like how someone's life could change, because I literally didn't send that much money. I think I usually send between 500 euros and 1,000 euros. Like I already mentioned, I was not a business. I just said to my friends and family as well, like, hey guys, who likes to have like jewelry from Uganda for Christmas?
How often, to just get an idea? Like at that time, it was like once a year?
Just once a year.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it was just like, yeah, literally like once a year around September, October, so that I had like in November, you know, like the necklaces. And then I would just ask my friends also at the student association, like, hey guys, please buy like a necklace, 10 euros, buy a bracelet, 5 euros. So just like super simple. Yeah, so nothing special, but yeah, it was, of course, like the impact you have in such a country with such an amount. Mm-hmm. To give you like an idea, like, yeah, secondary school is around 480 euros a year, you know? So yeah, with that amount, you can definitely like, yeah, go back to school and upgrade your living situation. Yeah. So then, yeah, Susan asked me to sell her jewelry at the international market. So then I started like, the Tending to Stars social jewelry business. Initially,
how did you do that? Like, to be a little bit more practical, like, I'm super impressed how it feels like you really went a little bit with your heart from one thing to another. Things came and you were kind of like, okay, go for it. I see what happened. So that really impresses me. But when she came and said, okay, hey, Stella, do you want to sell it internationally? What were your steps?
I mean, yeah, that's a really good question. So what were my steps? So first of all, I took some good pictures of Susan herself, then also her team of women that she decided to work with. So that were about, I think back in the days, like 8 or 9 women. So we took their pictures, wrote down their stories. Then I just like took some jewelry home. Then I went to the Chamber of Commerce. So I got myself registered with everything like brand name, logo, all of those things. Then what did I do? Then I went to some seminars of the Chamber of Commerce. Then I told all my friends, like, hey, I'm going to start like a social jewelry business. I need to build up a website, everything, you know, make a photo shoot. So then some of my friends recommended me to the startup campus in Rotterdam. Mm-hmm. This was like a 3 years program. So I started that in 2013. So that's like 6 years ago now.
So you basically, you applied for that in order to have funding for the project.
Yes, exactly. So I applied for that and I funded everything myself. So I was thinking whether I should like ask like investors, but that was all a bit tricky for me. So I decided to just fund everything myself and do everything myself. Sometimes I'm thinking backwards, maybe that was a mistake because I spent a lot of time on building up the web shop. That took me literally like 2 months because I had to read so many WordPress tutorials. But the problem for me at least was that when I asked people like, yeah, could you build my website? Either they said like, yes, and they wanted to volunteer. But then it turned out that they literally could spend only 2 hours a month on my project. So after 2 months, still nothing happened. Or they said like, yes, it will cost you 2,500 euros. And I was like, 2,500 euros? Like, I'm not even sure if this whole idea is going to work, you know? And you're like, how much I could achieve with that money in Uganda? That I also felt a bit bad. I was like, you know, then I rather would just give Susan a 2,000 euros. And you know what I mean?
Yeah, totally.
And of course, it was not the only thing. Like, then also designing flyers, designing cards, like everything. So I started to do everything myself in 2013. At that time, like, yeah, I didn't start a new job. So I was literally in 2013, focused on, starting this jewelry business. So I made like myself, like the flyers, the mood cards, website, but everything, of course, looked like a little bit more clumsy, you know, at least for the photo shoot, I had like really professional pictures because a friend of mine, the one who joined me also in Uganda, Liana, she was modeling for our collection and she knew some photographers. Mm-hmm. So that at least helped. But then again, our photo shoot looked too professional for our jewelry, because I was selling our jewelry for like 5 euros. And then people were like, what? This bracelet is only 5 euros? Like, your photo shoot looks like it's worth 500 euros.
Yeah.
So I also started to realize that, okay, maybe I should sell my bracelets in a package, not only one bracelet of 5 euros, but I should rather say, guys, buy 4 bracelets for 20 euros, you know? To make it more like that. So that was like a big learning school, also with the startup campus that really helped me to test also my product. So I went to the market in Amsterdam, sold the necklaces. Then I found out very soon that some of the designs, they were too much Africanized for them. You know, like people, especially in the Netherlands, they like to wear more subtle necklaces, not those like big show-off statement necklaces. You know, they like to have more something simple, also more like natural colors and not those popping pinks and bright colors, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So then in 2014...
It's basically market research in a way, right? It's like figuring out, okay, these colors work well, these don't work well so much. Yeah, and you just learned it along the way.
Yeah, exactly. But not only along the way. I mean, like, I did take this 3-month startup campus course.
Yeah.
If I would not have done any course, then I might have been really lost, because my background was international law and development aid and not that much into business.
Mm-hmm.
Although during my studies, I worked for Students in Free Enterprise, where we learned that the best way to help people out of poverty is by making sure they become self-sustainable.
Mm-hmm.
So with SIFE, we did have a lot of small business programs, but I was just like involved in on the board side, so not that much in the business side.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so then I was doing that for like a year. Of course, like all my friends, everyone was questioning me, like what I was actually doing, because in the end, I only launched the website in, I think that was October, November, 2013, because I also got really sick for like a few months, which helped me back a bit. And also because I was doing everything alone, it all took just forever, you know? So I launched the website only like, end of 2013. So then in 2014, I finally started to sell some stuff, but I also quickly realized that my money went down the hill. I didn't sold as much as I thought I would be. Everything still like, costed like a lot of time, especially not that much money, because as I already mentioned, like I tried to do everything myself, from marketing to, just everything.
Mm-hmm.
But then again, like my time wasn't really paid for. So then I started to realize I needed to find a paid job again.
Mm-hmm.
And I started to work for the European web shop of Calvin Klein. Because,
mm-hmm.
My languages are German, Dutch, English, and they needed like a fluent German speaker for their team in Amsterdam, who also spoke English and Dutch. So that was quite convenient. And then I worked for them 6 months full time, mm-hmm. to also get like a better understanding on, how does it actually work with this whole web shop industry. So I was still doing 22 stars, but only in the weekends and in the evenings. And as I already said, I realized that we had to change some designs. But you can imagine back then, Susan spoke English, but she still was not really able to read and write. So she still didn't have an email address. And all my communication with her still went through David. And I had to explain David the ideas I had with certain designs. Then he had to explain Susan. Then they were shipping it over. And unfortunately, sometimes there were many misunderstandings.
Mm-hmm.
So the sizes were wrong, the colors would be wrong. Also, Susan back then didn't really know like how to manage her whole team of artisans in Uganda. Mm-hmm. So they sometimes would send me the bracelets and the necklaces, and I would be like, the earrings are not finished yet. We send them in the next order, next shipment. But they would not understand that I had like a whole photo shoot planned, and it wouldn't make sense for me if the earrings would not be there for the photo shoot.
Mm-hmm.
Neither would it be possible to ship it later, because the shipping costs would be super high. So there was like from both sides, you know, like a lot of like communication errors. And then I figured out that I would not need to go back to Uganda if I really want to make this work. And I was really thinking for one moment, like, maybe I should just stop this whole thing. But then again, like, having met all those incredible women in Uganda, knowing that, it's really possible to change someone's life, I decided to go back to Uganda end of 2014, left my job in Amsterdam, basically left everything behind. And since then, I became fully nomadic.
But tell me what, as a besides it's a huge factor, but besides knowing you could change something, what else gave you the strength to really say, not only you want to keep up with that project, but also to say, okay, I'm going all in?
So I must say, like, also like in Amsterdam, I was just like partly satisfied with the type of work I did and the people and the mentality, you know. A lot was just about like working, party, working, party, you know, a lot of superficial stuff. And I don't know, I just didn't felt like that happy with it, neither with the type of work I did with the fashion industry, you know, like you always see how much goods are not even sold and they get destroyed, or people like buy things they don't even need, or like really nice things will get like on sale after spring, you know, like just there were so many things that I just didn't really fully agree with. And the same with the way development aid was done. I also didn't really agree with some organizations how they did things in Uganda. So I also really saw like, yeah, a gap where I really wanted to put in my knowledge in, you know, so that as well. You know, like, just imagine, like, that people always make strawberry cake and no one ever makes banana cake. Mm-hmm. And you just cake and you see the bananas and you're just like, hey, no one is doing this. So, you know, like that somehow as well, that I really saw, like, a possibility somewhere to do something.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say that was, like, yeah, also, like, a big drive, apart from helping the women. But that I really felt like, hey, I can really do certain things different than the way they have been done so far. Not saying that it's a complete new idea. I mean, of course, like, similar projects have been done already. But I would say in my case, the magic lies there that I'm like nomadic, so that I don't live 12 months a year in Uganda, neither 12 months a year in Europe. Like, I really do like a combination of a couple of months Uganda, a couple of months there, a couple of months there, which really allows me to be like a bridge between the cultures, to really understand the market very well, where we are selling our projects, our products, but also where we get our sponsors from for our foundation. And at the same time, I'm also like, yeah, often enough in Uganda to really see what the people need on the ground, but I'm also not there long enough to step on their toes, because, you know, like Susan and all the other women, they're doing amazing things on the ground and they speak the local languages. And if I would have been there to, 24 hours a day, you know, constantly looking what they're doing, I think they would not feel comfortable with that either. So,
and when you decided to do a nomadic life, did you know about the digital nomads, or how did you find them? Did they come to you? Was somebody telling you, hey, it's possible to work and travel at the same time?
So I had no clue that digital nomads existed. Like, what I just thought what I was doing was just like working location independent. So I just knew like, yeah, like I'm doing work and I can do my work from anywhere I want, basically. At the same time, like, yeah, I also realized that only traveling around in a backpack was not the best way to do things. So that's why I stayed for like a bit in Amsterdam. And then I moved after Uganda actually to Cape Town, because that's where I wanted to do the new photo shoot for the jewelry. Plus, I also believed a bit more in slow traveling. So, you know, to just like settle somewhere for like 3-4 months to be like the most productive. Mm-hmm. And it was actually when I was in Cape Town for those couple of months that I bumped into Johannes Völkner, who is now the founder of Nomad Cruise. Back in the days, he wasn't.
But he
always network travel. So I bumped into Johannes in Cape Town. And then I bumped into, tons of more digital nomads. And they really, really helped me a lot to also keep doing what I'm doing. So besides that, I saw like a need for certain things and the women, it also really helped to be in a community with a different type of mindset and being far away from home. Because I had a feeling like at one point in Amsterdam, you know, many people were highly skeptical of what I was doing, if it was working out, if I was not wasting my time and my energy, if I should not just become a lawyer or do something else. You know, that most of my friends were also not entrepreneurs. So I found that quite hard. But then being far away from home, where no one was judging me, you know, where I could really just do my own thing, that really helped me a lot. And then also with the Digital Nomads, who really helped me out with tips for my newsletters, for setting up an Etsy web shop, you know, all those things. Mm-hmm. So I joined like some vacations as well that year from Flux, Elma and Tarifa. I joined like the DNX in Berlin. And then in 2015, I joined the very first Nomad Cruise. And I would say all that together was super inspirational. And after this year, so in 2015, after the very first Nomad Cruise, on the cruise, many people told me that they would like to sponsor a child. So back then, I didn't have anything like that. I only had like this social jewelry business. And I was giving like a talk just about what we talked right now. You know, how I set up this web shop, how I did everything myself, the mistakes I made, like what I learned about it, what I would have done differently, but still like how it started growing, how I particularly used Instagram a lot back in the days to find wholesalers and customers for my jewelry, you know. So I just talked about that on the cruise. But then I also showed them that, unfortunately, our sales was going always like up, down, so very unpredictable. Because with the sale of the jewelry, we were running our local programs in Uganda. So it was not that I only gave Susan money. I soon found out that they needed much more structure with everything, like already mentioned, like that Susan in the beginning also didn't know how to handle a team, so that some women would take the jewelry back home to work on, would give her the jewelry too late, or would just use different type of colors. So we started, you know, with this whole social programs where the women would come together to work on the jewelry, but also where they would get like mental health support and general health support, that they also got dancing classes, drama classes, education, English, all of those things. But yeah, we never knew like how often we could run the programs, because sometimes we would have more, sometimes less. On the cruise, sharing this with the people that also many kids were still not going to school, even though thanks to this jewelry sale, we were able to send many, many kids to school. Still many were not going to school. And then that's how like the first Nomad Cruises told me like, oh, Stella, we want to sponsor a child. Like, forget about the bracelets and the necklaces. We just want to give you money to send those kids to school. So this started like, all in 3 years ago, 2016, after the first cruise. And then I just improvised. So I just made like an additional page on my jewelry website where I just put some of the children online of our artisans who were looking for sponsors.
That was in 2014 or 13 still.
2016.
16, okay.
So basically in 2013, I did the startup campus. Yeah. And I tried to, you know, set up everything myself. So then December 2013, I launched a web shop. 2014, I was working again full time. And then the end of 2014, I decided to become nomadic. So then, this was really like the end, you know, like November, December. So in January 2015, I basically became like a full nomad, met all those cruisers, met all those digital nomads. And then end of 2015, I met the Nomad Cruisers. Mm-hmm. So then 2016, this was like the Nomad Cruise number one and two for me. And then...
Would you say a secret also to continue or to grow in a business is generally also talking about the throwbacks? So that you, because I mean, basically, this is also something you did at the cruise. No, you said, okay, guys, this is the situation right now. But I still like have this and this and this. So what would you bring in? Do you think it's a secret?
Well, definitely. Like I always talk about challenges. I also organize social impact meetups with people from all over the world who are involved in social impact. And besides sharing our successes, we always share our current challenges, because that's actually the best way, you know, to grow and get feedback on it and learn. The same also with my team in Uganda. I always encourage them to also tell me what is still going wrong, because how am I supposed to know what doesn't work for them if they don't share it with me? And yeah, maybe the solution is super easy. Perhaps the solution is just like, oh, you know what, like, I'm going to give you guys glasses if you are not able to read, or you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, mm-hmm. Totally.
Super, super easy. So yeah, definitely always share like the challenges you have, because perhaps someone already went through the same thing. You know, like I sometimes know that people don't even know that certain optimization tools would exist, or people would use Excel not knowing what Excel can do for you. So they would literally like use Excel, and then they would like with their calculator calculate all the amounts. And I would be like, what the hell are you doing? You know that you have just like this function saying sum up all those cells, and there's your calculation.
Yes.
But if people have no idea, you know, so I would say, like,
this is something I also realized when I was at the camp in Dahab, that the moment you start communicating about it, there's always somebody who already had this experience, probably yeah. also ran against the wall and then found the solution. So yeah. I think you probably don't have to, I like that sentence, you don't have to invent the wheel anew if yeah. you can talk to others and get some ideas. And I this is something I also found really special about the Normit community. It's the sharing, because sometimes it feels like, especially in the business world, that you find a lot of people who keep it to themselves. So like not sharing your ideas, or maybe your whatever you already found, because it's yours, you found it. And this is what I found really personally very special about the Normits. And I totally understand when you said, you left Amsterdam because you kind of felt into a very closed up mindset, this idea of fear. So, I mean, how should this work? How should this go on? But for you, one question, when you left at that time, the Netherlands, how did you generally work with fear when it came up? Like, what were your tricks whenever something was kind of like eating you up and you were like, oh God, oh God, oh God? How did you do it?
Yeah, so really like talk and share with other people. So I would say I definitely had like tons of challenges, I still do. So in the beginning, like, when I went back to Uganda and became nomadic, I mean, it's never that I told myself, okay, this is what I'm going to do the next 5 years. I mean, I just said to myself, like, you know, I'm just going to try this out for like 4 or 5 months, and if it doesn't work, I can always come back to Amsterdam in April or May mm-hmm. and just have a bag full of experience, and I just apply again for a job, and you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So basically, like, nothing really to lose, except of course like the job and like applying again for a job. Yes. But besides that, you know what I mean? Like, it's like, yeah, whatever you do, it's not that you have to stick for it forever. Like the same when I started with the social jewelry business, it's not that I had to stick with that. Like at one point I realized that, that with the foundation, I would be able to make a bigger impact, which mm-hmm. you're doing right now. So then I started like the Turning to Stars Foundation, where we have 5 programs now. So the school sponsorship is one of it. But in addition, we have right now also small business trainings and microloans for more than 60 families. We have like a nutrition program and so forth. So what I really learned is just be super open-minded and flexible and open for new ideas. You know, don't say like, oh, I'm starting now this wedding photography company, and then don't allow you to at one point maybe become a wedding planner, or maybe switch to taking pictures of funerals. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Because sometimes people, they have like one idea, and yeah, then they too much want to stick to it, you know. So also with my jewelry, like I still have it, but the last 2 years I didn't put too much time anymore into it, because I really focused on the foundation. So I started to rent out my own house, which I have in the Netherlands. My stepfather died, so that gives me like passive income.
Mm-hmm.
So I say, okay, I focus now on the foundation. But now, of course, 2 years later, I'm like, okay, Stella, yeah, you're literally eating up your own savings again. You're just living from passive income. You're just focused all your time on the foundation last 2 years. What about yourself and your future? So now this summer, I want to make again like a little shift to see how I myself will be able again to earn money for myself, which does not come from anything passive, but really more like, yeah, looking into building up a long-term sustainable business. So that's my next phase now, you know, but I would really say like, yeah, we are all living in phases as well. And just really talk about challenges you have. For summer 2015, when I was back in Uganda, I focused a lot on finding clients for the women. And then I found my clients, but then I figured out that unfortunately, the women in Uganda, they're not able yet and ready to scale up their skills and their orders. Even though they told me, like I asked them, are you able to make 200 necklaces? Are you able to make 500 bracelets? And of course, like the answer was yes. You know, but then I told them like, look, we got now this new order in, we have to finish this. Then slowly but slowly, they told me like, can you give us 3 months? You know, even though beforehand, they told us that they would be able to do it in 4 weeks. And you know, this was again this whole like communication thing. Like they had no idea that if I would tell the American clients, guys, instead of 4 weeks, you will get it in 12 weeks, that they will say no. You know, because I was always very relaxed and sweet with them. Like whenever some orders came delayed or whatever, I was just always like, okay, that's the way it is, you know. But yeah, big corporations, they don't say that. If you don't ship on time, yeah, then it's just like, sorry, then we just go with other suppliers. You know, that's like a really, yeah, hard business world. And then like, yeah, and you're like, the women in Kampala would not be able to make it. So I was like about to tell our client, like, sorry, we have to let go of this order because yeah, we are just not able to make it. But at that time, I was sitting with a Ugandan friend of mine in a cafe in Kampala, and he has a coffee business. And then he said to me, like, say, like, are you crazy? Like, never let this client go. Like, whatever it takes, make sure you will make order. And I was like, what do you mean? Like, I cannot, like, tell the women to start working 24 hours a day without sleep and without food. Like, it's completely dehuman. This goes against my standards. You know, so I was a bit like, yeah, what the hell are you talking about? And then he said to me, like, well, I'm not saying, you know, that you should start using people as slaves. Like, I'm just saying you need to find another way to make this order ready. And then he said to me, like, Stella, you see the market in Kampala, there is a lot of paper bead jewelry. So your group of women is not the only group who are making jewelry. And I'm like, yes, I know that. So he said, like, well, why don't you just look if there is like another group of women who could make those jewelry just for now? And in the meantime, you just make sure that your group is skilled and in future they can also handle those orders. You know, so then I posted on my Facebook and I said like, hey, anyone in Kampala knows about women making jewelry. And then funny enough, Ida actually replied. So David and Ida were people initially introducing me to Susan and also helping me out in Kampala. But because I never ever, you know, told them about my challenge, they also were not aware of it. And they just moved to Jinja a couple of months beforehand. And then Ida told me like, well, Stella, actually in Jinja, I know like a group of women and they're making already jewelry since like more than years. They're super consistent with it. And yeah, why don't you just come over and give them the order? So then I went to Jinja and I met those women. And then I also somehow immediately felt guilty to tell them this is just going to be a one-time order and you will never hear from me again. Because I also saw that they also live in extreme poverty in Jinja. And since Ida and David moved to Jinja, they could be like the perfect contact persons for me over there. And I also just had trust that we would most likely get more orders in future.
Yes.
So then, yeah, I just started to work with the second group in Jinja. In the meantime, Susan had more time to train her team of women to also start, you know, be able to produce better jewelry. And we didn't lose the client at least, you know. Yes. So, yeah. So I would say like, yeah, really like talk with people because sometimes they're like very simple, easy solutions that you might would not have thought of immediately.
Also, I mean, what is in there is also what you just said, honest communication. You know, mostly it's our head, and in our head there is this certain kind of fear. So this is why we don't pass it on and say, for example, you know what, I can imagine you probably felt first very bad also towards your women you are already supporting, telling them, you know what, you are not able to do the order, so I had to ask somebody else. And but in the end, to whenever you start communicating, that you give a platform that when everybody understands, in the future you can work much better together.
Yeah, true. And also, like, handling your own emotions, because, of course, you know, like, when Susan told me, like, we are not able to make it, I also felt super sad, disappointed, frustrated, angry, everything, you know, because it's like, holy shit, like, I spent so much time behind my computer sending out, like, thousands of emails to all type of customers, stores, you know, I got so often, like, a reply with, no, sorry, no, sorry, no, sorry. And then there was finally, like, this client who said, like, yes, we will go with you, like, we want to make a big order. And I was so happy, you know, and then, like, yeah, finding out that the women would not be able to do it, like, that also really, like, made me really angry and frustrated, you know, like this moment that you just think, like, you know what, like, fuck everything, sorry for the words, but just like, yeah, fuck it. You know what? It's not never going to work, I'm going back home to Amsterdam, you know, because of course you put so much time and energy into it as well, and then it's something super frustrating if it then also doesn't work out. So quite often I would say also people, they don't even want to look anymore for alternatives or for solutions, because they're just like so annoyed and upset that they are just want to say, like, you know what, like, I'm just leaving, forget about it, you know. Mm-hmm. And that's, I think, also something that we really have to learn, like, because that's like this ego thing as well, that we really need to learn, like, okay, you put a lot of work into it, didn't turn out as you hoped, but there is still, like, hope, you know, you can still look for alternative ways. And I think quite often the human reaction is just like, yeah, fuck it, I'm going to stop now and I move on, instead of, you know, thinking on, yeah, ways that would work.
Totally. And I can imagine, again, this is also part of communication, that you just also can say sometimes to good friends, you know what, this is fucked up, I don't know anymore how to continue. And to also have this moment of, at least for a second, to stick your head into the sand and then get it poured out again and be like, okay, this is just, you know, this one moment.
Yeah.
I guess it's also part of that. But wow, also, thank you. Thank you very, very much, Stella. One thing, I mean, you kind of gave different examples how it's possible to support you. But let's say I want to support a kid with how much is it flexible, or is there like a least amount? And also, if I want to join your social impact trip, I know you are going to have one in the beginning of May, right?
Yes.
Is there still a space available or no?
Yeah, actually, like, the one in May, we still have two spots, because unfortunately two girls, they had to cancel last minute, so we still would have two spots for beginning of May. And I'm actually myself in Uganda till mid-June, so I will do like another shorter impact retreat as well when I'm there. So if people are interested for like really last minute May-June call, then let me know. And otherwise, I'm most likely planning the next one in September. So
the idea is to get an idea how it really works in situ, and to also get into a conversation with not only the women, with you, and kind of see what is possible and how to help.
Exactly. So it's actually like a quite deep program, and I would say it's not like just relevant for Uganda, but just for any development country you work in. So I also had like a lot of participants who wanted to start their own social jewelry business. Some people wanted to start their own foundation, which they even did. Others wanted to start like a similar project in Colombia. So I would say like it's really like somehow like a 7-day also learning school, you know, where I really guide people like through the steps I did. Also make sure like, yeah, what would work better for your social business, or a foundation, or if you want to choose like a cause you want to donate to, how do you figure out which one would be like the best. But then of course, also if you are not into this, like setting up a business or foundation yourself, like what can you do as an individual? So we go also a lot into this whole topic of neo-colonialism, about white saviors. All of those things, you know, which are more related to ethically traveling. And that, of course, does not just apply in Uganda. Also, if you go to Cambodia or you go to India or I don't know where you're going, even if you go to Barcelona, you know, or San Francisco, there are so many homeless people on the streets in San Francisco as well. So during this 7-day trip, like I really also help people like understand like how to deal with poverty in general, what they can do on the international level, on the local level, becoming like, yeah, more social aware about the products they buy, how they treat the planet. So, you know, basically just everything. So we have mastermind groups for that and workshops. But in general, like, yeah, we visit the women in the community a lot. So we also learn a lot from them, like firsthand, how they think and feel about certain topics. Then we also do some fun stuff, go on an offline weekend, do safaris, like tons of things.
Oh, nice. Okay, yeah. Perfect. I will put that in the show notes for sure. And how is it like if I want to support a child, is there also, do you give like, is it really like also with letter contact or how does this work?
So we have basically two different options to support a child. So let me start with the first one. The first one is like the long-term sponsorship. So with this one, we really encourage the sponsor to not just donate for one term or 1 year, but really several years. Thankfully, most of our sponsors are long-term, because you could imagine like if I would have 200 kids sponsored and then in December, all of their sponsors would say like, oh, we're stopping. I mean, yeah. Then not be possible for us to send those 200 kids back to school. And then after 1 year of school, they have to go back to the streets. So we really want to avoid that. And of course, we always do have some buffer and some emergency fund. So if like a couple of sponsors drop out because their financial situation changed or whatever reason it is, of course, we can still, you know, cover it up. But we could never cover up if at one point 300 sponsors would drop out. So we really encourage sponsors, long-term sponsorship. An advantage is that they indeed will get into our secret Facebook group where we post every single week pictures of our program. So the newest updates, what you're doing, pictures of the kids. In that group, they can also ask specific videos and pictures of their own child. Then the long-term sponsors receive 3 times a year the school report of the kid sponsoring. And they indeed like can also send us like a letter, for example, during the birthday of their child or just in general. And then the kids will also write like a letter back. So of course, from our side, administration wise, it's much more work involved as well.
Yes,
yeah. And I also really encourage, you know, that people who are really seriously committed to like the long-term sponsorship. And they are also able to like pick a certain child. So we always have around 5 to 10 children on our homepage who are looking for a sponsor. Mm-hmm. Sometimes kids whose sponsor dropped out. So they are already in our program but need like a new sponsor, or it's like completely new kids. So they can like pick a child or we give them a kit. And then the fees are per year, €240. So that's €80 per term, which comes down to €20 a month. Mm-hmm. So the sponsor can decide if they want to pay monthly, termly, or yearly. And this does not only include like the school fee of the child and a school uniform, but also the extra things. Like they also need like sportswear, they also need like books, they need pens, they need exam fees, development fees, all of those things. Then we have secondary school kids. They are double the price. So they are €480 a year. And for the secondary school kids, it's quite difficult for us, you know, to find them a sponsor because they're like, double as expensive. So for this year, we actually want to start giving people the option if they want to sponsor a secondary school child that they could do it together with a friend. So that basically two people would sponsor one secondary school kid. To just encourage people to also really think about the secondary schools. And then you have by times like special children who go to like a boarding school because, for example, both the parents died, things like that. In that case, if their fees are different from the average fee, we mentioned that on our website. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, it's like up to like a sponsor who says like, okay, I see that this kid is much more expensive. However, I still want to have that child.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So, and then like, yeah, if people say like, ooh, this sounds a bit freaky to me, this long-term commitment, because sometimes I get more money, sometimes I get less money. So in that case, you can, support like a child just like for one term, but then you don't become the long-term sponsor. So the child will still stay on our website. So we still, you know, look for a long-term sponsor, but at least it gives us a little bit more time to find a new long-term sponsor. You know, so then, like I already mentioned, we have always that a couple of sponsors drop out. So those kids without a sponsor, then thanks to you, they at least will be able, you know, to continue for the next term. And we have more time to find a new sponsor. So that's also highly appreciated. Or you can, of course, just look at our additional programs. So we always need money for our homework lessons for the kids, which we organize in the holidays. We always need money for repairing houses of the kids who broke down, money for water filters, mattresses, for food. So you can always look on our website and just make like a general donation, which we will like assign to something that is needed most at the moment. Or you can also choose like a specific thing like, hey, I want to donate 50 euros for water filters or this or that or whatever you prefer. And we also do business sponsorships. So if you're like a business and you sponsor, I think minimum 100 euros a month, you can see our sponsorship programs for the business people. Then we also give you like more additional things. So we will like mention your business in our social media. We mention your business like on our website. Depending on how much you sponsor a month, we even make like impact videos for you, which you can like forward to your clients. Which are like more customized. So I would, for example, say like, look, Kim sent 1,000 euros to us. With those 1,000 euros, we bought this amount of water filters, and then we make really like a personalized video for you. Mm-hmm. But yeah, for that, you can like, see our website with all the,
perfect,
the examples.
I also put that in the show notes. So, I mean, you also have Facebook, so they can see what is right now on. And so and if they want to get in contact, they can just do that through the website. What kind of communication do you prefer? Because I can imagine that you probably have a lot of communication daily. And what kind of, just through the website?
So I usually prefer like an email, you know, to info@foundation.org. Mm-hmm. Facebook, I mean, of course, it also works. However, sometimes, especially when I'm traveling and I'm switching time zones, I sometimes by accident will open my Facebook Messenger. Mm-hmm. And then I get like 10 new messages in and I just completely miss out on the message. It happens with Facebook a lot. Yeah. So I would say if you already messaged me through Facebook and you didn't hear back from me, then just, you know, be so kind and send me a reminder. Or just like an email, because if the emails, I can flag them. So the chance that I overlook an email is less likely. Yes, and that being said, and that being said, it's a part of like, donations, like money. We are super happy with people who would love to give their time and skills to us and help volunteering. Because right now, I do a lot of stuff still myself, also on a volunteer basis. I don't get paid for it. And it's just like a little work. So if people would say like, hey, we would like to help you with Instagram stories, please let me know. I mean, you don't have to volunteer for us like forever. Even if you just want to donate 5 hours a week or 5 hours only one time, that's still like super welcome. So you might could set up a social media strategy for us or newsletter campaign. Or if you even have seen our website right now and you're like, you know, Stella, your website looks a little bit shit because the fonts are not good, your text is too long, you're not getting to the point, then also please do not only tell me this, but maybe if you would like to volunteer, I can send you the login details of our website and you can just immediately fix all the English grammar mistakes and write our texts in a more catchy, summarized way, because I know that it's far from perfect, but unfortunately so far I haven't really found people who really wanted to help us out. Quite often I get emails, people saying like, oh yeah, I could like design a flyer for you, or oh yeah, I can make a PDF. And then I'm always telling them like, yes, please do so. But then I don't hear anything again for like 2 months. So, and I also mm-hmm. don't want to be too pushy or, you know, but yeah, if anyone wants to help us with text writing, social media, branding, editing of pictures, editing of videos, translations, anything you could just imagine, please let me know. Also like with Excel, we have always like a lot of annoying things to do with the spreadsheets, and they are the least sexy thing on earth to do.
Yeah, true.
Yeah. And I tell people, you know, like, yeah, I have a translation and I'm volunteering for 22 stars. You know, people, they always have those super romanticized pictures of me in their head. You know, they just see me like coupling elephants in Africa, seeing lions in the morning, seeing beautiful sunrises, and then like playing with the children. And you know, that's usually how people imagine volunteering is like. But to be honest, like, yeah, that's like our social impact experiences in Africa, which is more of a holiday. But yeah, the real work that I'm doing on a day-to-day basis is writing tons of reports, writing emails to the sponsors, organizing our Excel sheets, updating the birthdays of the kids whenever there is a mistake in it, like updating the school classes, updating schools, updating the fees, you know, like all of those like super boring, shitty things. That's my day-to-day tasks. And yeah, if anyone wants to help me out with that, please let me know.
I will, yes. This is... women out there, you heard it. If you can bring some skill in, please let Stella know. And even things like an Excel sheet, like you said, I mean, I think also everyone who didn't have the romantic view of building a company and being only doing the nice tasks will probably understand out there that there are also the unsexy tasks, and they all also have to be made, but it helps you a lot if they support you with that. Yeah. So I will put it all in. Yeah. Stella, thank you so, so much. All the women out there, thank you also so much to be part of this wonderful interview. And mm-hmm. you are so inspiring. I think this is really, really amazing. And also the way how you keep it up and how you went step by step. And there's a lot of details, not only with supporting your foundation, but also I think learning from you, how you build up a business, and that you not just wake up one morning and you have a business, or what I think some people also think. This is the romantic idea of it. You know, I go and there it is. So, but we would love you out there to let us know how you found it. Of course, you know now how to contact Stella. And please also spread the interview if you say, oh God, yes, I also have not only females, but also male friends who should really listen to that interview and should be part of your foundation. So that would be also really appreciated if you out there do that. And so Stella, thank you so much for your time. Yes, I wish you a wonderful, it's a Tuesday.
Thank you all for listening. And if you like to give back to 20 Stars, you don't only put like a happy smile on our faces, but we always love to give back to you as well. So yeah, we also give like shout outs to our volunteers, put them on our website and also help them as much as possible. So especially if you want to start your career in making a social impact, reach out to us and we can see how we can mutually help each other.
Perfect. Bye.
Thank you. Schön, dass du heute wieder mit dabei warst bei dieser Podcast-Folge. Wenn du das Thema vertiefen möchtest oder dich mit anderen austauschen willst, dann kannst du das gerne in den Kommentarbereichen von Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, Spotify und auch iTunes. Außerdem, wenn du eine besondere Reise für dein Frauenherz buchen möchtest, zum Beispiel auch deine beste Freundin mitnehmen willst, dann kannst du dich informieren unter www.dasherzeinerfrau.de. Dort findest du auch alle anderen Podcast-Folgen. Wenn du auf dem neuesten Stand bleiben willst, wissen willst, was ich noch für Projekte habe, beziehungsweise was alles hinter dem Herz einer Frau steht, dann melde dich gerne über den Newsletter an oder kannst mir auch direkt schreiben, da freue ich mich. Bis zum nächsten Mal und denk daran, lass dein Herz brennen.